This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Later on today's show, I'll look at the transformation that's underway in Over the Rhine. But first, did you get an unpleasant surprise when you saw your IRA or your 401k statement for January? The month was one of the worst starts to a new year in recent history for the stock market, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average losing more than 5% and the NASDAQ suffering an almost 8% drop. Here to talk about the current market climate and whether the Wall Street saying, as January goes, so goes the year, will hold true this year, are Foster & Motley shareholder and financial planner Luke Hall and Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. And you can be part of the discussion at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Luke and Chris, thanks for being here this afternoon.
You're welcome. Thank you.
It's always a pleasure.
Yes. Chris, a big number came out today, the inflation number, is that right?
The consumer price inflation figure for the month of January was reported. And keep in mind that this is a market, and again, the market's not just this kind of amorphous black box. The market is people. It's the people in the market. These are people who manage their own money, or they manage money on behalf of other people. So it's people, and people get greedy and they get afraid and they have expectations. And so the market expectation was that inflation was going to be flat. And this was a concern because they were hoping to see a sign that there's some kind of underlying strength in the economy that would make inflation go up a little bit. I mean, this is completely different than many, many years ago when everyone was fearing inflation. Now they're hoping to see signs of inflation to make sure that the economy has a pulse. And so today, if you strip out, I mean, the overall headline number was expected to be down 0.1%. It came in flat. And then if you strip out the oil, the very volatile energy component, and food, it was up 0.3%. And the talk ought to be that, well, maybe this gives the market an excuse. I mean, maybe the Fed is on the right track after all. And so the initial reaction was a knee-jerk, you know, let's take some profits. Weekend's coming. The market was down about 100 points, the futures. But now we're down about 50 or 60, and it's kind of noodling around there. So it's a big number, and it'll certainly get some attention over the weekend in the financial press.
Yeah, the fact that we have a little bit higher inflation than what was expected. I've been hearing a lot of talk about negative interest rates. Do those two things have a correlation, Chris?
Well, they shouldn't. I mean, eventually, the whole idea behind charging you money to keep your money in a bank is to get you to spend your money or invest your money, not keep it in the bank, whether it's a central bank or another bank. And that is designed to stimulate the economy, which eventually would lead to higher prices. So they normally, you know, should not be appearing at the same time.
Okay.
Generally speaking.
So we can kind of take it and say, oh, good, maybe this is, we're not going to see negative interest rates.
I think this is potentially good news. The Federal Reserve has worked very hard to create inflation for a long time, and it hasn't worked. The money stayed in the bank and hasn't gotten out and circulated in the marketplace. And now if we're seeing a little bit of inflation out there, that actually shows that the Fed's plan at least is partially working.
Right. I mean, their mandate, their dual mandate is price stability.
Right.
And as much employment as possible. So it's balancing those two things. So the market's doing, you know, not doing so badly. We're getting some earnings, especially from the technology sector overnight yesterday after the close, that have actually been pretty, to use a technical term, pretty darn good.
I saw IBM was actually up a little bit, and it's been struggling to recreate itself, and that's good news.
Yeah. So this is in an environment where people are nervous and fearful. When you think of the three dark clouds hanging over the market, you know, China, oil, and the election, the upcoming election this year, three unknowns, three dark clouds. There's starting to be some clearing, at least in two of them. We have, you know, China did a little better. They actually set their currency a little higher over the weekend, Sunday night in the United States, Monday morning in China. And that immediately sent the futures higher. Our markets were closed on Monday, but the Dow futures were up 200 points. I hadn't seen that in a long time. The market was closed here, but they were indicating a sharply higher open on Tuesday. It held throughout, and in fact, on Tuesday, we were up over 320 points. So it's been a fairly reasonable week. And even yesterday, when we got a little bit of a pause, the Dow was down 40 points. It's not a big pause, and there always are there, at least in the last 3 or 4 days, there have been pockets of strength throughout. So there has not been anything close to the rout that we've seen over the last couple months.
Yeah, there's the old saying, as January goes, so goes the year. It's a pretty miserable January. And that saying's been around for, decades now, I think. It dates way, way back. Any idea how reliable that is as an indicator?
It sells a lot of magazines. sells a lot of articles.
That's true.
I
don't know. I think it's more reliable than not. But, at 50% of the time, that's a coin flip.
Yeah, generally, and this was another fascinating chart. If you go back to 1980, for example, just look at how the market closed. There have been major drawdowns. So just to give you an example, even when 2009, remember that after the March, it was right around this time of year that the market finally began to bottom out. At one point, we were down almost 50% from peak to trough. And yet that year, the market was down at one point in 28% from in the first quarter of the year. It finished 23% higher. And the following year, it closed 13% higher, the S&P 500 did. But at one point, it was down 16%. So just because you run into a rough patch doesn't mean that the year is lost. And the rough patch happened to occur early this year.
And I think the jury's still out. If the stock market should be a leading indicator for our economy, and there are not signs of recession yet in our economy. I attended a call last week that they looked at 10 different indicators, and only one of those 10 showed a recession on the horizon, and that had a lot to do with oil. So oil has been operating in its own world. So we think that it's potentially just slow growth, but uneven growth. We've not been used to volatility. We've gotten used to the a little bit more every year, every month. Your statement looks a little bit better.
We've gotten spoiled, have we, Luke?
It's been an unusual period because it's been so calm. The more usual periods have 10% drops as a normal course of business.
And in fact, volatility has been with us now since the markets hit a peak back in May of last year. It's been an extremely volatile time, starting with the sharp decline in August, triggered by concerns over China and the fall in the price of oil. And then again, those came back to the forefront earlier this year. So one of the other thing to keep an eye on is that we're going to start getting numbers that are going to be weaker than expected because it happened last year. It happened the January before. This will be 3 Januaries in a row where the weather, named storms, will just play with those numbers and make them look bad. And yet, just because you couldn't dig a hole in the Boston area to start a house in January doesn't mean that that house isn't going to be built. It just means that economic activity is going to be pushed back a little bit further into the year. One last thing, too. There's something called the Federal Reserve's GDP Now. The Atlanta Federal Reserve publishes this. And according to that, this is a real-time number. This was in Barron's over the weekend. That number showed the economy growing at an annual clip of 2.7%.
That's a good number.
Compared to now, China is still growing at about 7. But 2.7% growth here is much stronger than people had thought of. So if the question is a recession around the corner, maybe the odds have gone up. But it's still a long shot.
Yeah, that's something that always baffles me too, Chris. People talk about China slowing down, but 7%? They're still growing?
6.9.
Okay.
I think China's numbers are always suspect, though. I mean, we do have to realize we are dealing with a communist country there, and the numbers are what China wants them to be a lot of the time. So if they can control those numbers, they're going to control those numbers. I actually know fund managers that manage mutual funds that don't trust any of the numbers coming out of China, but they do trust electricity use. So they actually look at the electricity used and see if that matches what China told us that was happening. Yeah. If it's lower, then they don't believe them. If it's higher, then that's good.
Well, there's one other thing you could do that's real time. The air quality index that we use here in the United States is the same one used there. And if you Google AQI, Air Quality Index Beijing, you will see exactly, I mean, generally, even when the air is breathable in Beijing, which isn't often, you almost have to go up to Mongolia before you can take a deep breath. It's an amazing website, and it's there in real time. So if you wonder, well, are the factories humming? Are the factories running? Are people driving around in China? All you have to do is go to that website, AQI.
So if the air is cleaner, then they're not producing
as
much.
They're not doing as much, right. Okay.
Just, I mean, if you want to look for real-time data.
Real-time evidence.
There it is. There it is. But also, speaking of real-time, this is tax time.
Yeah.
This is tax time, too. And so 1099s are just being mailed, or they're available online. Many of the tax return software are now, those applications allow you to import your data automatically, saving you countless hours of eye strain and frustration. And those are now being available. They're now being made available online.
So it's a really busy time between the market being tumultuous and then taxes starting to come into play. You're seeing a lot of activity, I take it, Luke.
There's a lot going on. There's and all of those things cross at some point, too, because of the taxes in the market, and they work together to some extent in each of our personal financial situations. So we were talking before the show, is it a good time to take some tax losses?
Is that a good idea?
I think it is. If you have a taxable account that you have investments. Not an IRA. It doesn't do you any good in a retirement account or your 401k or your IRA. But it may do you some tax good to sell something that's gone down. Go ahead and purchase something that was a lot like it. So, for example, Exxon, we know, hasn't gone up. It's gone down. You might sell Exxon, but you want to retain your energy exposure because energy makes our economy go. You might trade Exxon for Chevron, but if you had a loss on Exxon, you can book that loss and use it against your 2016 taxes. And even if you don't use the entire loss in 2016, you can move forward and use it in future years.
And there was a lot of talk about this a number of years ago because I believe the excess tax loss carry forward. Let's say that you sold stuff outside your IRA and you had $10,000 of losses or $10,000 of gains, but you had $13,000 of losses, then you could actually take those additional $3,000 of losses and apply them against your ordinary income. That's still the case.
And you can still do that.
Okay. Has that number changed? Because the number of losses in portfolios had grown so big by this time 7 years ago that there was talk that maybe the tax loss carry forward should be increased, but it's still $3,000 per year.
It's still $3,000 per year. Now, you can use all your losses to offset your gains. If you don't have any gains, then you can use $3,000 of your losses to offset your regular income.
And you can keep carrying that $3,000. If you have $21,000 in losses, for example,
7 years.
You got 7 years to take that off your taxes.
So unless it's like a tax savings account in a way.
Yeah, unless you have a gain the following year. So you can if you have these tax loss carry forwards, then any gains that you book in the succeeding years will just be sheltered by that, your tax savings account.
That's right. That's right.
I think the key thing, though, that you said, Luke, was not to, if you do this, if you sell a stock that you have a loss on, don't go into cash, right?
Right. Right. That would be a reaction to the down market.
Yeah.
So we don't want to be scared. We want to maintain the growth that we need to achieve our long-term goals. So we're going to need exposure to stocks in order to be able to retire, to do the things that we want to do in life. So you don't want to sell Exxon and put it in cash because cash won't grow. Cash is paying zero right now. You want to reinvest it in something similar that has a good chance of growing and supporting your long-term goals.
Yeah. Even the 10-year Treasury is paying about 1.75%.
It's sad.
Well, and so imagine if you—
Which is why my question about negative interest rates earlier.
Well, imagine— You know, almost a bank treating your money as if they treat you staying at a hotel. I mean, when you stay at a hotel, they don't pay you to stay there overnight. You pay them. And now, in a negative interest rate world, you pay the bank to store your money overnight.
Well, I think, unfortunately, that's pushed some people out into some investments that I probably didn't have any business investing in. So some of our clients that were enjoying the yield from their bonds and from their cash accounts several years ago when we actually had good interest rates, now have been forced to invest in dividend-paying stocks and maybe other things that are a little more different and risky than they have a business being invested in.
Yeah.
And I think that may create some problems for some people with this additional volatility in the market.
Right, because very few people complain about upside volatility. But when the volatility is accompanying,
when things are going up, we're all happy.
People seem to overlook it. But when it's volatile and going down, that's different. You know, it's also interesting, too, because the rules regarding retirement plans have been in a state of constant change. The numbers that you can contribute to a 401k go up every year. They, and whether you can do it or not or deduct it or not, that gets better every year. A lot of interesting things.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests this afternoon, Foster & Motley shareholder and financial planner Luke Hall and Chris DeSimeo, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. You can join us at 513-419-7100. Email your questions to talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Oil, energy prices, China, commodities, all kinds of things, all kinds of headwinds the market's facing right now. But what's the impact of the wild and wacky world of politics on this, Chris?
Well, here we are, February 19th, and you know why that date's important. It's because it means that Pictures and Catchers reported for spring trading yesterday. No, actually, here we are as we enter. We have another primary election ahead of us tomorrow. And if you look at the election cycle and how markets generally do, now typically, keep in mind, talk about the January effect, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Usually, the third year of any presidential cycle is a good year. Last year was not a great year for a lot of people. The fourth year of any election cycle, going back to 1928, the returns are in the low double digits on the average. However, that's not the way it always works out in election years where there was no incumbent running.
Interesting.
So, 2012, for example, not the greatest year. And in fact, 2008, on the average, you know, the market was down 38%. So when there's no incumbent and there's not as – even if you don't like the incumbent, at least you know who this person is and know how to deal with the incumbent. The market – the people who make up the market have an idea of what to expect. So when you have no incumbent running, there's an additional layer of uncertainty. And as one by one that fog clears, you tend to get a little bit of a rally in the years in which no incumbents are running. You tend to get a rally in the summer, and it stays through September, early September, and then as the election is upon us, then there's usually a decline. That's been the pattern. Doesn't mean it's going to happen, but that's been the pattern. So it's just something to
So be, politics could be playing into this to some extent.
Well, it's the people who make up the market would rather have bad news many times than not know what the news is going to be. Because they can deal with just about anything as long as they know what it is. But it's hard to it's that fog. It's trying to see through the fog that makes it's this cumulative hesitation. It causes people who might otherwise invest in a good company to say, well, I want to wait a little bit and see how this shakes out. And so it does tend to dampen buying enthusiasm.
By the way, you were talking about tracking the AQI, the Air Quality Index in China,
yes,
to see what they're really doing from a factory standpoint. Dave called. He said that World Real-Time Map site is waqi.info. So thanks, Dave, for the information. We appreciate it.
It's shocking. I just have a bookmarked on my smartphone, so I just hit it. But it's you know, again, why try to guess at this stuff if you don't have to? If you can just get it right there, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, look, we talked about how from a tax standpoint, when you have a market decline like this, it might make some sense to sell if your stocks are held in a taxable account.
Right.
But for people who have them in a 401k, have them in an IRA, What are some things they can do when they see this kind of market tumult going on? I mean, are there any solutions for them?
Taking a logical approach versus an emotional approach is pretty important. People should rebalance their portfolio. Things just went on sale for a little while. So stocks have come down. They're cheaper than they were. I like to buy things when they're cheaper. So right now in people's 401ks and their IRAs, they should own a little less stocks than they did at the first of the year. It might be a good time to sell some cash, sell some bonds, buy some stocks. So you're accumulating shares. So when things do recover, and they always do, it's going to go up. You own more of something. So I think rebalancing is important.
And especially it's important to keep in mind that no matter who wins the election, no matter how oil prices move, no matter what's going on around you, one thing that we know is going to happen, and that is for the next 14 years now, there on the average will be about 10,000 people in this country per day turning age 65. And because of the decline of the traditional pension plan and its replacement with you save the money, and then when you retire, you get your check, and thank you very much, and you, that means all of us, rebuild our own income streams, that should provide support for income-producing instruments. And at this particular time, that means generally owning businesses that have the ability to pay you a rising stream of, you know, dividend-paying stocks.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. And we'll talk now with Maureen in Fort Wright. Hi, Maureen.
Hi. It sounds like this is a good time to maybe put some additional cash into a retirement account. Can you tell me about the ceilings and how much you might be able to put in at one time?
Save until it hurts, Maureen. It depends on your age. So if you're under age 50, you can set aside $5,500 into an IRA account. If you're over age 50, if you're 50 or over, you can put aside $6,500. And you can do that not only for the 2016 tax year, but if you haven't done so yet for 2015, you can do it and still reduce your taxes. Depending on your income level, you may or may not be able to deduct the contribution. And you should always does your employer, Maureen, match contributions into your 401k plan?
Yes.
Are you and you're taking full advantage of that?
I am.
Good. Good. Luke?
I think you should maximize your 401k and your IRAs, and then move on to the next level of importance, and that's your taxable accounts. That could be a bank account. That could be a brokerage account. So the retirement funds are definitely more important. You want to do those because those have distinct tax advantages. But once you fill those up, it's not a bad thing to send some money off to your brokerage account and buy some things while buy some securities while things are on sale.
Now, with a 401k, what are the limits on that? How much can you put into a 401k, Chris?
I think it's $18,000 this year. And again, if you're over 50.
There is a reward for that.
Yep. It most certainly is. You can sock away $24,000.
So you get like a catch-up amount. You can put extra in if you...
Yes, the so-called Heinz provision. Yes. Sorry.
513-419-7100, and let's talk with Rick in Owensville. Hi, Rick.
Hello. I have a question about exchange-traded funds, their advantages and disadvantages, and if you do annual asset reallocation, how they might be best used.
You want to take that first?
Sure. So the ETF, sure.
Yeah, the exchange-traded funds actually do have some built-in tax advantages if you hold them. But if you're rebalancing them and you're selling some, then you will take a gain or a loss depending on whether that exchange-traded fund rose or fell in value since the time you owned it. So generally, rebalancing with any fund, whether it's a traditional open-end mutual fund or a closed-end fund or an exchange-traded fund, is best done inside some kind of retirement plan. But there is an inherent tax advantage to exchange-traded funds that you hold. When you're trying to rebalance them, it gets a little trickier in an after-tax account because you are creating those taxable events every time you make a shift.
And with the exchange-traded fund, too, I mean, you're getting a lot of these things are very diversified, aren't they, Chris?
Yes, and in fact, it's hard to believe that the very first...
It's not like buying just one stock.
Correct. I believe that the very one of the first exchange-traded funds, if not the first, was brought out about 22 years ago, and it was based on the Standard & Poor's 500. So it essentially allowed you to invest in that index and trade it throughout the day.
Yeah, the nice thing about ETFs is they are priced throughout the day. An open-end mutual fund is only priced at the end of the day. So with an ETF, if you sell it, you know what you're going to get. With a open-end mutual fund, you don't really know what you're going to get. You get close, but you don't know until the day is over with.
Yeah, and it's important also to keep in mind that while initially exchange-traded funds were almost always based on an index and passive and therefore had lower costs inside the fund, that there are many new flavors of these funds that have – they're called smart beta or alpha added. There are lots of different ways to do these. And some of these – the world of exchange-traded funds now is moving beyond the traditional passive index fund. So it's important to be – you have to be mindful that they're not all the same and to look before you leap.
Time for one more call here. So let's talk to Q in Fairfield. Hi, Q.
Hi. How are you guys today?
Great. Thank you.
What's up?
Well, I recently became unemployed, and I had a 401k with my job. I don't know what to do with it. I don't want to get hit with those major taxes come next tax season, but I want to invest it in something or put it in something or roll it over, but I don't know what to do.
Luke?
I don't think you have to do a thing with it. You don't have to be in a hurry. Just because you left your job doesn't mean you have to leave your 401k. There won't be any tax effect to leaving your job as long as you leave money in the 401k. The minute that the taxes are due, when you take money from the 401k is really when you create a taxable event. So as long as you leave it alone, you're fine. There's no tax consequence. Now, I would encourage you to make sure that it's well invested. It may make sense to consolidate that 401k, roll it over into an IRA where you can buy some things with the help of your advisor that may be better for you than the menu of investment alternatives that your 401k had to offer.
Yeah. But also, Q, you may want to make sure that you don't mingle it with any of your other 401ks, because that way, if you keep it separate and don't make any additional deposits into it, then if you work for an employer later who has a 401k offering, you may be able to roll it back into that 401k as long as you keep it separate and don't add any of your other money to it.
Hey, Q, thank you for the phone call.
Thanks
we appreciate
calling.
It. And Luke and Chris, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
You're welcome, Mark.
Foster & Motley shareholder and financial planner Luke Hall and Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. And as a reminder, the information provided on today's show is general in nature and may not apply to your personal investment situation.